Today, you're doing over a million?
Top line revenue, we set a goal this year, and we are just over the pace of doing 5 million.
Five?
5 million, yes.
Unbelievable. Wait a second. You have five territories? You're doing a million per territory.
Yeah.
You went from literally at death's door, bankruptcy, like I'm done, to the number one operator in the system. That speaks volumes. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Today's guest is the definition of a world-class franchisee, Rob Matthews, multi-unit owner of Mr. Appliance across Ohio and Michigan, and the number one operator in the entire franchise system. For context, Mr. Appliance is part of the massive Neighborly network, over 20 brands with 5,500 locations and over $4 billion in system-wide revenue. It's the largest home service organization on the planet, and Mr. Appliance is one of its crown jewels. Rob and his wife, Regina, bought their first territory in 2012. Today, they scaled into a $5 million operation across five territories and were named Franchisees of the Year for 2025. Rob's growth didn't happen by accident. He scaled with strategy, the kind of precision you'd expect from a three-time national pool champion. He acquired neighboring territories run by franchisees who weren't following the model and turned them into top-performing assets, pure franchise execution. And despite being number one, Rob still leads with humility. He meets with his corporate coach, leans on other franchisees, and he taps into the collective intelligence of the network. That mindset to learn, collaborate, and execute is exactly why he's on top. Rob Matthews is the blueprint for what franchising is supposed to be. All right, let's get into it. I'm going to start out with how does a three-time national pool champion, right, end up in a franchisee or Mr. Appliance? You may be the most interesting guest. Tell me about this.
So I have played pool since I was 16 years old. I have three national championships, two team events, and one singles event. And it's just something I really enjoy.
And still play.
I still play league. Not as much as I used to. I don't play like I used to, so I'm not as good as I used to be, but because of practicing that, because the business takes up a lot more time. And the honest answer there is because of my love of pool, I have been an appliance technician for 30 years.
Okay.
But there's actually a couple billiard league franchises out there. Mm-hmm. And one of them's called APA, American Pool
That's
Players
right.
Association.
Yeah.
And I wound up buying the local franchise here. And at about 2012, July 2012, that franchise was doing very well. We had grown over 125%. And at that time, I was a technician trainer for Best Buy.
Okay.
Well, July 3rd of 2012, they decided to put everyone through a layoff and a restructuring. So my wife said, why don't you just open up your own business? Mm-hmm. And I told her, I was like, unfortunately, small mom and pop businesses just don't make it as much in this type of world because there's just so many things changing. Right. And she's the one that actually came up with, well, what if there's a franchise since we're having, you know, good luck with running the franchise we are now. We understand the franchise situation. That's and right. At that time, the president of American Pool Players Association, Renee, I asked her, I said, have you heard of this company called the Dwyer Group, which it was before Neighborly,
That's
it was
right.
Dwyer Group.
Yeah.
And she said, yes, they're very good. They're family owned. So we looked into the Mr. Appliance franchise and went to Waco, Texas. I liked what I heard. We decided to buy into it. We opened our doors in February of 2013.
Okay.
I was the only technician. I was doing it all on my own. The first month, we had one service call. Wow. I was like, man, is this really going to work out? This is scary, you know, because you expect to do more. But at that time, the next month, I was doing about four calls a day. It started picking up.
How? Stop there. This is phenomenal. It's gold. To you, it's not gold. To the audience, it's gold. You buy a franchise. This is not a small brand. Mr. Appliance, Neighborly, Dwyer Group at the time. This is, at the time, was probably a $900 million company. Massive company. I think today, it's a $4 billion company. Most people don't get the full story when they start exploring franchising. So they make mistakes. That costs them big. That's why my business partner, Justin Guevara, and I wrote Beyond the Brand, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Fearless Franchising. It is our proven six-step process at Franosity to help you find the right franchise, avoid costly pitfalls, and build a business that truly fits your goals. Grab your copy of Beyond the Brand on Amazon or any major book retailer and start building your future fearlessly. I want to go back now. You start this thing. Everyone thinks they're going to buy a franchise and it's going to rain customers, and it doesn't. And you are one of the few people that bought a franchise that already had direct industry experience. As you know, most people buying franchise, they didn't come from the background of what they're buying, right? You're that rare example. What attributed to getting one service call? What then attributed to you doing four a day? Walk me through that.
Well, some of that, it was the fact that I bought a franchise. A little story is that second month when we started getting four calls a day, I went to a customer's home and serviced them. Fixed their appliance. I don't remember the exact appliance, but I remember the conversation. Fixed it. She's like, oh my God, you guys are awesome. I've used Mr. Appliance for years. Well, there was never a Mr. Appliance in this area.
Okay.
So the name itself had already carried over, and the customer even thought they were using this brand for years, and it was never around. So that brand recognition was already in the area before I ever opened my doors.
Okay.
There was a Mr. Appliance location that bordered us in the Akron area. At the time, it was owned by a different owner. Okay. And I had just purchased only about half of the Cleveland area. So it was the west side of Cleveland. And we were doing, at that time in 2013, they were still pushing yellow pages, as well as pay-per-click was not as known on how to attack pay-per-click in Yelp and internet advertising in 2013. It was still in the early stages because no one knew how to go after it. And we were starting to do that with the yellow pages, with that, and people started using us. Well, as we were starting to gather reviews, we were getting more calls. We were being available. The biggest thing I tell every owner, well, how do you get more calls? How do you get more work? And the answer is answer your phones.
Oh, I love
you. And that is, it's huge. I can tell you how many owners, they don't get to their phones in all brands, in any part of it. If you don't answer your phone, the customer's going to go to the next person. They were a lot of long hours, you know, trying to run everything.
Yeah.
In April, I was filling up my days and I brought on a technician for the first time. Well, about that time going into May, that Mr. Appliance in Akron approached me and wanted to sell.
Nice.
And I'm just brand new. I'm only open 3 months.
Yeah.
So I go to, at the time, the president of Mr. Appliance was Doug Rogers. He came from Whirlpool. He actually was big into turning the Mr. Appliance brand around, getting the proper way of doing things because he came from the industry as well.
Right.
And they allowed me to acquire that territory. Well, now I have to add another technician. I have three techs. So by the end of the first year, we had three technicians and hired a trainee.
Okay.
But in the first year, we did $253,000 in revenue.
Okay.
Not a lot. Not a lot.
Not
compared
for three.
To now. Compared right. to now, especially. And, you know, we just kept pushing and growing. What I was trying to do is I bought a franchise. I didn't want, and that's the other thing I explained to my wife. When you go out on your own without the franchise, you have to make a decision. Are you buying yourself a job?
Yeah.
Or are you buying yourself not a career, but a business, something that you can retire on, something that you can build, a possible legacy that you can pass on? And I didn't want a job. I didn't want to buy myself a job. And you see it happen so many times. I wanted to continue to build and grow and make this something that was a legacy that gave the best service in the area. There was a lot of competition. Well, there still is a lot of competition in my market in the Cleveland area.
Okay.
And these appliance repair businesses have been open for 50 years. Within the matter of 10 years, I outgrew them all.
Wow.
Because of the support of the franchise, pointing me in the right directions,
right,
showing me where my mistakes are and helping me correct them. It's not all, you know, candy and roses, though, because I grew so fast that in 2015, I was concentrating on growing so much that I almost bankrupted myself.
Okay.
Which was a hard part. We didn't know if we were going to be able to stay in business because we were growing so much. We took on so much debt. And again, because of the franchise, I went back to the franchise directly and said, hey, our revenue's there, but our profit's not. We're losing money. What can we do? And he said, okay, here's our next step. You need to get out of the truck. You yep. shouldn't be a technician, which was hard for me to understand because I considered myself a very good technician. I'm bringing in a lot of money being on the road. Problem is I was losing more money not being in the office.
Right.
And that was a hard reality. But without having the backing of the franchise and the support they give, if I was by myself, I don't think I would have ever realized that.
Right. That's very honest of you, and I agree with you. A lot of people will become a victim. If you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. How could I grow this thing if I'm not out in the field and if I'm not doing the repairs, if I'm not pressing the flesh with the homeowners, asking for referrals and getting 5-star reviews? They need me. I have to be out there. But you're right.
Yeah, it's always in our mind, no matter what. No one can do it better than yourself.
Right.
So my hardest thing was delegating.
Good for you.
And then it's very hard because I was a trainer. I was a good technician.
Yeah.
I'm a go-getter. I'm a strong personality. I was never a leader.
Okay.
And that was a hard thing that I needed to learn. And I had to learn some by trial, by error, some by some support. And that's the second part of the franchises. I was able to talk to other owners that go through the same thing I went through and could help with their experiences. The franchise is great, but everything's on paper. It's the way to do this and that. But the owners, such support from the owners group. I've made great lifelong friends with these owners. And we have owners groups and we talk all the time about what would you do in this situation? What could we do? And I still consider myself, because of the older owners that are still around, I still consider myself a young owner. I can't believe that I've been doing this 13 years and I'm now one of the top franchises that other owners come to me for and, you know, ask my opinion and ask for advice. It's hard for me to believe that because I still think I'm that newer owner. And looking back at, I know I don't know everything, but it's nice that I can share that advice to the newer owners as well.
Right. And today you're doing over $1 million?
Top line revenue, we set a goal this year and we are just over the pace of doing $5 million.
Five?
$5 million, yes.
Unbelievable. Wait a second, you have 5 territories? You're doing $1 million per territory?
Yeah, technically, yes. Yep.
All right, so when we were doing our research, we were learning that it was $1 million, right, in total. You're doing $5 million. Good for you, man. And that's impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. We've been blessed a little bit that every year that I've been in business, I've been able to grow that top line revenue every year. And we're right on pace to do 5 million. Last year, we did 4.4. The year before that, we did 3.2. We've been growing, you know, at a pretty good pace in both areas.
Rob, early on, I want to go back for a minute. You mentioned debt, you know, some issues there. How were you doing this? Were you doing seller financing? Were you going to the SBA to cash them out? How were you acquiring these territories so young and so early?
Well, first of all, with my territory, how I financed this with, at the time, the Dwyer Group, I took, because Best Buy offered us a layoff, they gave me a severance package,
okay,
you know, paid me for another month. And that, so I took my severance package, pretty much went through a person that we were able to get high credit line credit cards and we were cashing on them and we used those to finance everything we needed on the business.
Okay.
Well, it might not have been the best thing at that time. I never applied for an SBA, but that's how we bought the first area. And then the second area in Akron, when we acquired that, it was an owner sell. He just wanted to get out. So we took over his note that he had with Dwyer, and we paid him monthly payment until we paid off that area.
Okay.
Michigan, we acquired a small area in Michigan in 2020. So I was doing everything in Cleveland up until Cleveland, Ohio area, Cleveland, Akron, until 2020. I told my wife, I was like, I didn't think at that time I could build Cleveland, the Cleveland area, to a high enough level that could support where I wanted to go. So I said, I'm going to need to add more territory than another area. Well, I was looking around and this one territory came available, 200,000 population, very small.
Okay.
But it was in a very good part of Michigan. The person that bought it was in it for like a couple of years. He was in the medical field. He just wanted to get out of it.
Okay.
So at that time, I got it for a song. It was $20,000. The guy just wanted to get rid of it.
What?
For 200,000 population. Yes, I did. I stole it. It was, he wanted to get out of it. So I went to Michigan.
Holy crap.
And I was the technician in Michigan to get it going. I had two techs. They were gone within 2 days. He didn't know what he was doing. He wasn't making any money or anything. The first month, we did over $25,000 with me as the only tech in Michigan. And they asked right away, they said, how did you do that in 1 month? And I said, I answered the phones.
Unbelievable.
I said, there.
That's twice.
That's twice you said answered that. The phone.
I'm big on this. I know we don't know each other. I'm big on this. 62%. There's a study done on this. 62% of small businesses, their phone goes unanswered.
Oh, that's crazy.
62% of the time, someone is calling to do business with you. 62% of the time, small business will not answer that phone. Blows my mind.
It's crazy. You've got to put the work in. So I went up there and ran it myself until I could train technicians and go. Well, again, fell into my lap. The neighboring territory in Michigan, he was huge. But this is right around COVID, right? He's lost. He's down to two techs. He's done with the business. He wants to get out. He offers me that territory. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of territory. You have two techs. He had previously, his previous high was like $1.2 million in a year.
Wow.
But he was down to like $600,000 for the year. It was falling out. He had way there. So I took that territory over. We just blew that away. That territory this year, after 5 years, is going to do close to $2.3 million for the Michigan area.
That's nearly half of your revenue in one territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ohio is going to be about 2.7. It's got three less technicians, but the techs up there are all 10, 15-year experience techs, and they're only about 400,000 behind for three techs in the two areas. So in 5 years, I more than tripled what they were making in that area.
Wait a second. You have how many techs generating nearly $3 million in revenue? How many?
In Cleveland, we have 14 technicians.
Okay, got it.
And in Michigan, we have 11.
Okay.
And that's the second part that has helped me grow. It was hard in Cleveland to find more than six techs. Every time I'd hit six techs, I'd lose a tech. It was hard to find experienced techs. We were training our own. As we built our reputation, we have now become the place where technicians want to come to work for us. They see how we treat our technicians. The good thing about being a technician is, as I tell the techs as they interview and everything else, the great thing about working for me is I know what it's like to be a tech. I know what you go through. I can understand it. I'm not sitting behind a desk making decisions, mm-hmm. not understanding your job.
Love it.
The bad thing about me being a tech is that I know the BS you'll try to pull. And they find that funny because it's true.
Right. Don't sell the salesman. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And they understand that, but I'm always here to help them. I can also teach them how to deal with customers, how to deal with situations. I still get called for technical knowledge. I have also been a person of the last few years, I've actually held my own sealed system training classes for other Mr. Appliance locations to teach their technicians sealed systems. I have owners that have their technicians call me if they have a technical question. That's why we wanted also to help all of the franchisees and their technicians. When Ron Schimmick became the new president of Mr. Appliance in 21, I think, maybe 21, 22, myself and Stephen Hughes, another owner who was a technician, pushed them to have our own Facebook group for technical help for our technicians. Okay. That way they're not getting bad advice from people that aren't technicians. Unfortunately, because we're the bigger dog on the block other than Sears, a lot of self-owning dealers and servicers, as well as other technicians, do not like Mr. Appliance. They do not like us, so they badmouth us a lot on a lot of the forums. And we wanted to take that negativity away, and we wanted to give them the support that they have. And we have over 1,000 technicians nationwide for Mr. Appliance.
Right. Absolutely. It's a big group.
Yes. Very big.
That's awesome, man. I can't believe what you've acquired. It sounds like you never say no. Answer the phone. You're just out there. Now you're in a leadership role overseeing the organization. You have your 5 territories. Are you going to continue to expand, or no? Now I'm just going to go a mile deep with what I have and increase revenue. What are your thoughts there?
The answer to that question is yes, for both. But it depends on everything that's going on. Right now, because of the territories I have, I've realized that I can expand what I have, and I'm working on expanding everything I have before I go to that next step. Mm-hmm. I want to grow the Cleveland area and the Michigan area to where it can't be grown anymore.
Right.
And as I keep building, someone else will, take over certain other duties as it frees me up to keep that growth going. Expanding wise, yes, I want to expand more and more, but it's got to be the right situation or the right area. My wife and I joke that if I buy another territory, it's going to be someplace warm. So yeah, it's our summer area.
Right.
Cleveland's not the best in the winter, but I enjoy it. And one thing I want to go back to, you touched base on something. You said, it doesn't sound like I ever say no. And you are absolutely correct. That is something that I teach my CSRs and my technicians. When a customer has something, we never say no.
Right.
It's, let's see what we can do for you. Go that extra mile and make them feel important. That helps the growth as well. That's why our reviews are amazing for a service company, 4.8.
That's right.
Most of the time, 4.7, 4.8 in all the territories, which is amazing. And there's thousands and thousands of reviews. Yeah. For a short period of time that we've been in business, even though it's 13 years, that's still a short period of time for a business.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, considering how long appliances have been around in the homes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're young compared to how long the industry has matured with having home appliances and how many competitors could possibly be operating in your market generationally. It's like I took this over from my grandfather, my father, right? It just continues.
Mm-hmm.
So it's true. Yeah, you're young in the market, but man, you've left a mark. Those are some enviable numbers. I'm trying to wrap my head around the 5 million still. Where are you in the hierarchy of the system? Meaning, are you the top? Are you like, no, I'm number 10? Are there people bigger than you in the system? That's a big number.
As of right now, we are the top revenue in the business. We are number one on what we call our top gun list, which takes revenue, which we are number one in revenue. It also takes net promoter score, and it takes market penetration. And combine those three numbers, it's like 50 for revenue, 25% for market share, 25% for your reviews NPS score. And we are number one with that, but the gap is closing fast. As of right now, there are about 250 owners, 350 locations. There are now 64 owners that have hit the $1 million mark.
Wow.
So at this time, even hitting $1 million, you're not even in the top 10%.
Unreal.
As this industry continues to grow.
Okay, great. I love that comment. I have a question. If you spoke to someone about, let's get into the appliance repair business, this is what you will hear. Why would I want to be in the appliance repair business when these things are built to fail and you just replace them? Talk to me about the market that needs you. What are those demographics? like maybe even the brand names that you're fixing. Like, are you really fixing a Whirlpool? Or no, it's going to be like Sub-Zero and it's going to be Wolf and it's going to be high-end KitchenAid. Talk to me about that.
That's a great question. And that is actually one of the easiest ones that I can answer, because appliances have changed over the years. I have been in this for 30 years. I have seen the change on how appliances are. When I started in the 90s, appliances started becoming cheaper. Mm-hmm. No one cared what their kitchen looked like. Most of us growing up, our kitchen appliances didn't match. We had a white refrigerator and a black stove. No one cared. Right. Well, in the 50s and 60s, and even the 70s, and everyone remembers the Brady Bunch. Yeah. If you look at their kitchen, they had a copper tone wall oven and cooktop, and everything matched because the kitchen was the centerpiece of the home. Mm-hmm. Well, in the last 10, 15 years, the kitchen has become the centerpiece of the home again. You want matching appliances. I want stainless steel. Well, stainless steel is more expensive. Technology has grown exponentially. It's great. There's different technologies. You can go on your phone and tell your fridge to tell you what food you need from the store while you're at the store. You can turn your oven on, your dishwasher. It's all technology now. We, as a society, want the better technology. We want the looks. We want to be able to show off our kitchens again, even though we don't cook as much as we used to by far, but we want our kitchens to look good. Appliances are not made to fail. That is one of the biggest myths out there. Okay. When someone tells you, I have a fridge that's 50 years old and it's still running and never needed a repair, that 50-year-old refrigerator has probably four movable active components. Your new appliances have 20 to 25 between sensors and controls and motors and everything. So it's not that they're designed to fail. It's that you're going to have more failures because you have more components that can fail, just like on a car. Okay. But they are also three times as efficient to run, and you don't want it to last 20 years because the technology is changing so fast that that 40, 30-year-old refrigerator that you're running is costing you that new refrigerator every 4 or 5 years.
Right. Wow. And inefficiency, like energy usage and
repairs.
Energy
usage and efficiency and everything else. Everything is different. You know, so many myths on appliances. It's one of those things that it's hard to combat. Refrigerators. People are like, you know, my fridge isn't cooling. I must be overstuffing it. Well, the problem is that the more you have in your fridge, the less it runs, the more efficient it is because it holds the temperature. But everyone thinks the opposite, that it's working harder because you have more in it. It's not true. Same thing with soap, with washers. If we use more soap, it's going to clean our clothes better. In actuality, it'll clean less because there's too much soap in there. It can't use the water action and clear the dirt and the suds from the clothes. It's awesome that your clothes smell like Irish Spring. Mm-hmm. But if you smell that on your clothes from the detergent, it didn't get rinsed out of your clothes.
Right.
And that's why people break out, because they're allergic to the soap because it never got rinsed out. There's a lot of things we always overdid. You know, for years, we've overdone that for years. The soap manufacturers will put on their bottle how much soap to use. Well, the problem is that's for the harshest water conditions. So in Ohio, city water's softer. We use less soap. If you have a water softener, you use even less soap.
Okay.
If you have a well, you use more soap. Again, different myths, you know, on what's going on. Do things work as well as they used to in ways for what we're looking for and what we're used to? No, but in efficiency, in how it protects us, it works much, much better.
Okay. Interesting. But I'm not hearing that your business model is based on the high-end brands.
No, it's not.
That's not true.
If you spend, if you go out and buy a Whirlpool refrigerator, it's for a French door, water and ice through the door, even if it's a basic one, you're $1,500 to $2,000.
Right.
Are you going to do a $500 repair on it in 5 years? Absolutely.
Right.
The products are being made for that. Now, Are there appliances? You can always get maybe what we call, I wouldn't call builder grade, but you need a washer today, you go buy a cheap washer. Mm-hmm. Our biggest competitor is not the other appliance repair store down the street. It's a brand new appliance.
Right.
Most appliances are worth repairing. And if they're less than half their life expectancy and half the cost of a new unit, the things that you want and that we sell, and I won't even say sell, that we offer, the things that we offer are quick and timely service so that you're not inconvenienced. Would you rather get that fridge fixed today because we can do it today?
Right.
Or would you rather take the weekend and have to go shopping?
Right.
And go into those stores and then figure out what you want, and is it good as the one you have? And now you've got to learn the new unit, and is it going to match? Because, you know, with all our lives, the washer doesn't match. Now I need a dryer, you know,
that's
and
right.
We go for that. But we need to show value as well. And that's the value of repairing something that's not necessarily high end. The honest answer is a Sub-Zero, a Woof. If we walk into the house, we don't have to do anything. We tell the customer what's need and we fix it.
Right.
That's the easy ones. It's the ones that you have to think about that you know you have to go in and show them the value, show them why it's worth fixing. How fast can we do it? If a customer tells me this is 12 years old and they've had 3 repairs, maybe it's time to move on. You've
right.
probably done more. But you know what? We've had customers that will repair them because they don't want to go shopping. They're used to that one. It matches. There's a lot more involved than that. And that's why it's important to know your customer. Our customer is that middle-class customer. And that's not saying anything else is not our customer. But our customers, that middle-class customer with 2 people working in the home, with 2 kids, 2 to 3 kids that are playing sports, that are in school, that are running around, that they don't have time.
Time starved.
To yeah. deal with this. It's yeah. not, price is not as much of a factor as it was 20 years ago.
Did you service LeBron James?
I did.
Did you do it? You did? What happened to him? What was his appliance snafu?
Oh man, there was a few things. His wine cooler,
okay.
which was a wine cellar, it had a vault door on it that you could only access by fingerprint. He had bottles of wine that were probably more expensive than my house.
Wow.
A couple beverage coolers, ice machine. I actually serviced him myself. And the funny story about LeBron James is that when I went to his home, he was never there, but Bronny was there. I met Bronny once. He was like 12.
Okay.
I went to his home to service him, and he actually had an elevator to go into his basement.
Wow.
And I took the elevator into the basement and I got stuck in his elevator.
Oh my.
Security, you could get on the cobs. I'm like, I'm stuck in this elevator. What it move? So that's the funny story as I serviced him that I am actually,
oh my,
my claim
trapped.
To fame is I got stuck in LeBron James's elevator.
Unbelievable. They ultimately got you out?
Oh yeah. It stuck. It was like 5 minutes and then it started working again.
Unbelievable. See, everyone thinks that appliance repair, that's your customer. That's just not true. It is middle class.
No.
It is the person that says, I don't have the time. How much? You say, well, what is the answer? What is the average ticket of an appliance? If the phone rang right now and you just had to guess, like, look, it's an average phone call. It's an average ticket. What is that value?
The average completed job where repair is done is about $350.
$350. Okay. It's lower than I thought. Okay, yeah. It's lower than I thought you were going to say. That makes sense. All right, I like it. Now I'm starting to really understand. It is a myth that this is a high-end, you know, service only, the higher-end brands, where it's no question asked. It's going to be $1,000, and you're like, you know what? Fix it for a grand, because the refrigerator was $15,000.
Well, especially in the areas that I service, not everybody has a million-dollar home.
Yeah.
Those are few. I wouldn't say few. They're maybe 10% of our customer base. So you wouldn't survive, even if you're getting the bigger ticket, you wouldn't survive on that.
On just big ticket, right.
On just
you need
big
the average
items,
every day.
Right. Not
Home
for
Depot,
a size company, right.
I'm with you. What is the brand to stay away from? Can you touch on that? Like, look, this brand is just made like shit.
That is the second most commonly asked question, probably, is brand. And again, it's an easy answer. I can tell you this. I have 25 technicians, and then I'll include myself.
Yep.
If you ask each of them that question, you will get almost a different answer, each time. My analogy I use with customers all the time is you have five people that go out and buy a Cadillac. Four never have a problem, say it's the best car ever, they'll buy them the rest of their life. One has a few problems, say they'll never buy it again, it's garbage.
Right.
It's all personal experience. My opinion of what I would stay away from is going to differ for someone else's opinion.
Right.
I tell customers, usually if you're looking cheap, it doesn't matter. You know, buy whatever's cheap. You know, I have people that say, hey, I want to buy a washer. It's only myself. Okay, buy the cheapest thing out there. You're not going to use it enough to really worry about it. I got a family of four. Then I'm going to tell you to buy a front-loading washer, whether it's Whirlpool or Samsung or LG.
Okay.
I have LG appliances and Samsung appliances in my house. But if you look, you'll see people say they don't like LG, they don't like Samsung. Another myth that happens a lot, and this is, we get a lot of service from this. We have customers call us all the time in our area that they can't find anyone to service LG or Samsung appliances, or they're told that it's hard to get parts for.
Okay.
It's not true.
Okay.
Anyone that tells you that just doesn't want to work on them, or just doesn't know how to get them, or is intimidated by them.
Okay.
Again, the brands are different because every brand, so I'm talking Samsung, LG, GE, Frigidaire, Whirlpool, they're going to have their base affordable product.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, it's like buying a Chevy Trax, which is a cheap SUV, or buying an Escalade. You're going to have your low ones that are going to be made just like that to get you through. And then you're going to have your higher end ones. So it's not based on brand. It's based on what models and what you buy at that time. If you buy inexpensive to solve an issue, you're going to get an inexpensive appliance that's probably going to give you about 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
Or not be worth repair. Whirlpool makes a washer, $350, $400. The control board fails on them about every seven or eight years. The control board itself costs more than the washer cost.
Oh, my goodness.
So it all depends. But then you buy a $1,500 front-loading washer, and it's worth a $600 repair
right.
in 7-8 years, as long as it was taken care of.
Right. Very cool. We talked about scaling. I wanted to get more involved in that. I love that you've addressed some of the things on our side of the business, which is, I don't want to get involved in home services. You're never going to find the staff. Now, you did admit that you had difficulty not finding the worker. You had difficulty retaining the worker, right?
Yeah.
Or both.
Yeah, at the beginning, a little bit of both. Some was retaining, again, because I wasn't the best leader. I didn't know how to handle certain situations being a tech. The other was they weren't the right fit for our culture. You know, if you get someone that's been doing repairs for a year, you know, they're set in their ways. They may not want to do our frontline service. Our frontline service is a doormat on the floor before we walk in. We wear shoe covers. We wear a tool mat. We're respectful of the home. Yeah. I can take anyone off the street and teach them how to replace a pump on a washer in 10 minutes. But if you don't give the value in the frontline service, you do not fit our culture.
Have you ever brought an employee in saying, you don't know this industry, we're going to teach it to you. I'm going to mentor you. I'm going to groom you. You're going to become an appliance repair tech.
Absolutely. I have trained multiple employees, and three of them that I trained in Cleveland are in the top 10% of all technicians in the nation. They're in the top 100 techs in the nation, and we will train them. I don't do as much training anymore, but I have my service managers and that can train now. We do train. We do help. We have a couple guys now that needed some more training, so we took set back and we're going to train them some more. And we were just having this conversation. The trades have always, over the last 25 years, have been looked down. I do not have a college education. I have a high school diploma. I went to a trade school. I liked working with my hands, and I got into this field. College isn't for everyone, but it was pushed. I believe seeing what was going on with my children, who are now all grown, that it was pushed a lot to them. And it doesn't always fit with everyone. They all have college degrees. It's great. They got their education. But trades is something that is always needed. But the trades that I did started 30 years ago have changed so much. It's not walking into a house, getting greasy, getting dirty, just with auto mechanics, with heating and air conditioning, with stuff like that. Everything's become technical. They diagnose themselves. You just have to know how to be mechanically inclined, using tools, teaching that. That can be taught easily for a person that has the willingness to learn that and absorb it.
Agreed. I think the trades are making a comeback.
Absolutely.
I agree with everything you just said, but I believe that people have realized that college is a big business. Some of these CEOs of these colleges make seven figures. It's a business. It's a very big business. Not everybody belongs in those seats, as you said, and I agree with that. And not everyone is chasing a career that even needs it. It's like, I don't need to get a bachelor's degree in finance if I want to do other things. Like, you just don't need it. So I agree with you. And thankfully, it's making a comeback. And this country is also now bringing manufacturing back. So we need these people. Like, COVID exposed all the things we don't do, right?
Oh, COVID, absolutely.
Yeah. COVID proved, like, we make nothing, including ibuprofen. Like, we didn't make anything here. It's like, wait a minute. How about gloves? No, no gloves. We don't even make the masks. Nope. We need China for masks. Like, we needed everything overseas, which is just crazy. So thankfully, it's making a comeback. Thank goodness.
Well, you know who was working during COVID, right? And bringing in a paycheck?
You.
The trades.
That's
appliance,
right.
Appliance companies.
All home services.
All home services were essential. And it was working. And you have guys that are under 30 years old that are making between $75,000 and $100,000 a year instead of being $75,000 to $100,000 in debt.
Are you able to explain that? How do you compensate a tech? Take me through the comp of an employee.
So how we compensate someone is I have a pay structure in place where they're paid an hourly wage, and then they get a bonus on top of that. We used to call it, as I did it for years, commission. Mm-hmm. Commission was based on what you sold, but we want to do it the proper way. So what that does is that helps the technician if they repair the right amount of appliances, which brings in the right amount of revenue, they get a bonus on top of what they did. That also holds them accountable for any repairs that they do and lets them have a little skin in the game to make sure they do it properly so they don't have to return and take up another spot for a call. Mm-hmm. I don't like calling it selling jobs because we're not selling. This is not a sales job. This is, I call it performing the repairs for the customer and showing them the value on why something should be repaired over replaced. Okay. But we always stay honest. If it's not worth fixing, we tell the customer, quick, don't throw any money away at this. So they're guaranteed an hourly rate, and then they're guaranteed that bonus on top of it for their job skill and efficiency on the job.
Okay. It's your vehicle.
Yes.
You're providing the vehicle, you provide the tools, and you provide the customer.
Yes. We give them everything they need to do the job, plus some. They supply their own hand tools, but any specialty tools, any extra training, any diagnostic stuff, we supply all of that to help them do their job properly and efficiently.
If I was an entry-level tech, what should I expect to make an hour?
Entry-level tech with no experience, we're going to train you and we're going to pay your training, and it'll be somewhere between $20 and $22 an hour to train. We're bringing you in and we're paying you to learn the trade.
Okay.
Once you get on the road yourself, then you'll do warranty calls, part installs. We would come up with a possible hourly increase when you hit certain criteria. And then it takes a tech approximately, depending on the person and what any previous education they may have had in a trade school, 6 months to get on their own to just do what we call part installs or warranty work.
Okay.
And then that gets them more comfortable. We usually let them go a couple months and see how they do. And then we pull them back in for some more training because now they can apply that to something that they've seen on their own. And then it takes an average of about 2 years for a technician to hit their stride where they're comfortable being on their own to do almost anything.
Okay. On this 350 average ticket, if I'm a tech, am I keeping $35 of that? How does that work? I have my hourly base wage. I performed a service. It was a $350, just an average ticket to completion. What do I keep of that as the tech?
So once you hit your bonus number, you get 25% of the total 25. Ticket. 25%. Wow. Which is really good. And that's the total ticket minus tax. Once you hit your bonus number of where it starts. So you have to do a certain amount of revenue to be able to hit that number.
Right. Pay for yourself, sustain yourself. And then there's that blue sky bogey, 25%. Right. Are you being generous or no? I'm an industry standard. I'm competitive.
That is a very good question. It's yes on both sides. For some techs, especially learning, we don't throttle it down. We're 24% for regular techs, 25% for very good techs or sealed, what we call sealed system techs that can perform sealed system repairs, compressors and stuff like that, and refrigerators because it's higher training. We're about average for the regular tech.
Okay.
If the tech is good, they can control what they make. That's the thing. I could have techs averaging $60 an hour.
Okay. Wow.
And then some techs are averaging what they're making an hour because they haven't got to that point to get that bonus. And again, that's where they need some training, and the training never ends. You're constantly learning. That was the great thing about being an appliance technician is I didn't see the same things over and over again. I felt like I learned something new every day.
I like it. Let me ask you a question. We're coming up on time. People who listen to the show are prospective franchisees. They want to get in this game. Most of the episodes, just so you know, are not interviewing people like you. We're interviewing the founder of a Mr. Appliance, the founder of the brand. This is one of those rare episodes where we're interviewing a rock star franchise owner. So what advice would you have for someone listening if you want to become self-employed? What attributed to your success? What could you share with the audience relative to your success as a franchisee and a franchise system?
The best thing about it is that I found out that I wasn't alone. I wasn't on my own. I decided to do the franchise for the simple fact that I had all this support, not only brand recognition, but I have my own franchise business coach that I can reach out to anytime I have questions, have issues, need help with something. I can reach out to other franchisees that give me support and advice. I'm not by myself. I don't have to sit here and try to figure out the answer on my own and not be able to come up with the right answer because these mistakes have already been made and corrected. And the franchise has done everything they can to help you survive. What you want to look for, though, is if you decide to go into a franchise, you have to understand that there is a system to follow. If you come in thinking that that system's not right for you or that you're going to follow step A, B, and C, but you're going to skip D and E and go straight to F, you're going to fail. If you're not taking the time and understanding what's going on and how they're there to help, that might be the biggest thing. Don't recreate the wheel.
Right.
They're there to help you. They want to see you succeed. And that's when I see most of the owners that may have failed in the past, it's because they didn't follow the system. And it's a hard thing to see because you can see it from the outside.
That's right.
You know, but you can only...
Like the guy in Michigan is an example.
Absolutely.
Honestly.
Lots of support. You just got to be part of it. And the other thing is that you have to, and this was a very hard thing for me because as you could, you know, probably heard and just from pool and everything else, I'm a very strong, independent person. It was hard for me to swallow my ego and think that I knew it all. You know, imagine yourself as that teenage kid again, that you think you know everything and your parents are telling you it's this way and you think you know everything. It's the same way when you're buying into a franchise. You know, you've got to at some point accept that you don't know everything and they're here to help you.
What's amazing, Rob, about listening to you, you're saying you're number one in the system. You're doing $5 million a year. You still have the right mindset, the right amount of gratitude towards the system. You're still leveraging collective intelligence, whether it's the corporate office or neighboring franchisees. Like, you're still out there. You, even at $5 million, number one in the system, you don't have this attitude of, who's better than me? Why would I call the corporate office? How could they be? Like, I'm doing $5 million. I have five territories. I love that you have this attitude, if you will, this mindset. It's just so positive and refreshing.
Yeah, I probably speak to my franchise business coach 3 to 4 times a month. And I'm always looking for improvement. And it's even more important now at $5 million. $5 million means that those are big numbers, but mistakes are even bigger. And I have now almost 40 employees that count on me for their livelihood. So I have less room for error than before. Anyone that thinks they're going to buy into any business, that it's going to run itself and they're not going to do anything, those are the ones that usually fail first. You still got to put the work in. There's days that I'll work till 8, 9 o'clock at night. But guess what? I've purposely said I'm going to take a Friday off. I'm going to go on vacation. I'm going to enjoy my grandkids, because now I've earned some of that. So it's a lifestyle when you run a business. And again, one other myth, everyone that looks at you, friends, family, people that barely know you, say, oh, you run a business. You're doing great. You're rich. Yeah. You're this. No, I just enjoy what I do, and I'm going to keep growing and wanting to grow, because it's making me happy. It's something that I want to do. And I want to make sure that I follow the system and follow the processes even more now than before.
Rob, to hear you speak so affectionately with such respect and pride for the brand, I just love it. I think it's fantastic that you found like your place and you're seeing the value. And that's what a lot of people don't understand about franchising. They get so myopically focused on the cost of opening and the royalties. They don't understand, like, you went from literally at death's door, you were at death's door, bankruptcy, like, I'm done, to the number one operator in the system. That speaks volumes. Thank you for taking the time away from your business to spend it with me, man. I'm grateful.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks, bud.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss out on more great content. And if you're considering investing in a franchise, whether it's the brand you feature today or another opportunity, we're here to help. Visit us at franocity.com. That's FRANOCITY.com. We'd love to help you take that next step towards business ownership.